if someone were to come up to you and ask you, what is the gospel, do you think you'd feel confident in giving them an answer? How many people here feel that they'd be confident in doing that? I wonder what the proportion would be compared to those who, oh, I'm not sure exactly, what could I say, or what exactly is the gospel? But as Christians, we believe the gospel. That's what we say. And we also say that believing in the gospel is, ordinarily speaking, necessary for salvation. But we need to be clear about what the gospel actually is, don't we? If it is linked in with an individual's salvation, we need to get it right, and we need to get it right in particular when we're sharing it with others. So today we want to explore a little bit more about what the gospel is, in particular by looking at what the prophet Isaiah says about the gospel. And you might be thinking, why look at Isaiah about this question? Shouldn't we be looking at the New Testament to find out what the gospel is all about? Isaiah, as most of you probably know, he's an Old Testament prophet. He lived 700 years before the time of Jesus. What can we learn from him about what the gospel is? That might be a natural question to ask. But it's not actually correct to think that way, to think that, well, it's the New Testament where we find out what the gospel is. The Old Testament also has a lot to say about what the gospel is. And we can see this in particular from what the Apostle Paul says about his own ministry. In the very first opening verses of his letter to the Romans, Paul made the claim that the gospel that he preached was promised beforehand by God through the Old Testament prophets. So the gospel that's there in the New Testament is consistent with what has been talked about beforehand in the Old Testament. And in fact, when we read the Old Testament prophets, most of the time when they talk about the future, they're actually thinking about the New Covenant age, the age when Jesus is going to come. And they're explaining basically what the gospel is all about. So the Old Testament prophets are actually a good place to turn to in order to find out more about what the gospel is. And that's what we want to do today. The passages that I've chosen to look at today, we've got one from Isaiah 40, the other one from Isaiah 52. And I've chosen these because these represent the earliest explicit references to the gospel in the Old Testament. Now, we need to keep in mind here that Isaiah, he was prophesying about the fall of Jerusalem, but a key part of his message was to answer the question, what is God going to do following the destruction of Israel by the Babylonians? And in Isaiah 40, we have a famous chapter that speaks about God's intention to comfort his people. Okay, after the bad things that have happened to them, what is God going to do? Well, he's going to comfort. He's going to comfort his people. He's going to bring about an end to their punishment. And we can see in Isaiah 40 verse 9 that the herald is called upon to go up to a high mountain and to proclaim the gospel, basically, to proclaim a joyful message. And thinking about the gospel, it's perhaps helpful for us to think about, well, this word in itself, where does it come from? Well, the word gospel in English, it's made up historically of two elements. You've got the word good and the word spell. And the word spell, back in older English, it meant announcement or narration or news. So you can see good spell becomes gospel, right, over time, as people say it. It literally means good news. And in Isaiah 40 verse 9, the herald is called upon to proclaim this gospel. He's to lift up his voice strongly and not to be afraid, because this is a message for all the cities of Judah. In other words, all of Israel has to hear this good news. And please notice the content of the message there in Isaiah 40 verse 9. The core of the good news is the message, behold your God. Here we can see that the good news has to do with God arriving on the scene. God is coming. He's coming to be our king. And verses 10 and 11 unpack this. It says, "Behold, the Lord Yahweh, he comes with strength, and his arm rules on his behalf. Behold, his reward is with him, his recompense before him. He will tend his flock like a shepherd. He will gather up the lambs in his arms and carry them in his bosom and guide those that are nursing." Here we can see that a key part of the gospel is God's arrival. God is coming to deliver his people. He is coming with strength to exert his rule over the world. God is coming in order to show himself as the king who is in control. And friends, this is what the Bible means when it talks about the kingdom of God. We know that when Jesus came, the kingdom of God was near. It was appearing. It was being established on earth through Jesus' ministry. Jesus has come to establish this rule of God over the world. And this is a key part of what the gospel is all about, as we can see here from Isaiah. God coming to be our king. And when he comes, please notice, according to Isaiah here, there will be reward for those who submit to his rule. If you want to experience the blessings given by the king, if you want to be a citizen of his kingdom and experience the good things that flow as a result of that, then you need to be in submission to the king. And this is the significance of the confession that we make when we come to faith in Christ. The key statement of Christian faith is the confession that Jesus is the Christ, or a variation of that is Jesus is Lord. What are we saying when we say that? Jesus is the Christ. He's the anointed king. So by coming to faith in Jesus, what are we confessing there? We're acknowledging that Jesus is our king, that he is the God-appointed king of the world. What we have in Jesus is God in physical form entering into the world to be the divine king to whom we must submit. Now, even though God's rule will be effected through strength, according to Isaiah, please notice too how tender God will be towards those who are members of his flock. When he comes, God will be a good and kind shepherd who cares tenderly for his sheep. He'll be carrying the lambs in his arms and leading the nursing ewes to water. Here we have an image of God as a shepherd, a good shepherd, a shepherd who is kind, who's tender, who cares for his people. And friends, this is what the gospel proclaims to us, that in Jesus, God has come into our world. This is good news. It is good news indeed. But it's only good news for those who submit to Jesus' royal rule. Those who oppose his rule will feel the strength of his arm against them rather than the tender strength of his arm protecting them. Now, if the idea of God coming is uppermost in the verses that we've just looked at in chapter 40, then the idea of God reigning is uppermost in our passage in Isaiah 52, verses 7 to 9. Verse 7, here in Isaiah 52, it starts off with an interesting image. How fitting, or how beautiful are the feet that proclaim a joyful message, that announce peace, that proclaim a joyful message of goodness, that announce salvation, that say to Zion, which is just a poetic name for Jerusalem, your God reigns. What we have here is an image of a herald who comes running from the battlefield with the wonderful news of victory. The good news is God has won the battle. Peace and goodness and salvation can now be experienced. The enemy has been defeated And God, our God, reigns as king. And looking on from the city walls, what do we get? We get the watchmen. They see the approach of the herald and they hear the good news. In verse 8, we see the watchmen lifting up their voices. Together they shout out in joy as they see with their very own eyes Yahweh their God, the Lord their King, returning back to Zion after winning the great victory on the battlefield. It's like when your team wins the grand final. What happens? Everyone shouts and celebrates the victory that has been won. Maybe for some of you, you're hoping that'll be the Roosters next week, right? Anyway, verse 9, what do we get? Here we have the people of the city. They're encouraged to join in the celebration of the watchmen. They're encouraged to break forth, to shout out in joy together at the wonderful news of victory. The places within Jerusalem that had formerly been laid waste by the Babylonians, now they're called upon to shout with joy. For the Lord has comforted his people. He has redeemed Jerusalem. He has bared his holy arm in the sight of the nations, and all the ends of the earth will see the salvation of our God. Friends, here we can see this passage in Isaiah 52. It speaks of the good news of God's victorious rule being established for the benefit of his people. Winning the battle, God now brings comfort to his people. He's achieved redemption for them, and he's revealing his power and salvation. The salvation that he has effected, it's being revealed now in such a way that all the nations, the whole of planet Earth, will see and take note. Now, taken together, both of these passages from the book of Isaiah tell us that the gospel is actually more than just Jesus dying and coming back to life again. Now, sure, Jesus' death and resurrection are the key events that stand at the heart of the gospel. But in order to understand the significance of what Jesus has done for us, we need to see what he has done in the wider context. And these passages from Isaiah help us to do that. According to Isaiah, the gospel has to do with God's powerful entrance into the world in order to establish his rule over the world for the benefit of his people. The gospel has to do with the coming of the king in victory to reign over his people. That picture of the gospel that we get from Isaiah helps us to understand the significance of Jesus' coming and the purpose of his death and resurrection. Jesus coming into the world is nothing other than God himself entering into our world. To put this another way, God has chosen to reveal himself most clearly to us by entering into our world in human form as the person that we know as Jesus. Through Jesus, God has entered into our world in order to defeat the forces of sin and death. And he did this by going to the cross. We can say that Jesus going to the cross and his death there on the cross, that was his battle. That's the battlefield that he was engaged in. And his resurrection shows that he is victorious over death. Death could not keep him down. He has emerged victorious the other side of the grave. And this also means that sin must have been defeated. For if the price of sin had not been paid in full, Jesus would still be dead. He'd still be paying the price. So what we can see here, as the king risen from the dead, this Jesus is shown to us as the one who has won the victory. And all people everywhere are now being called upon through the preaching and the invitation of the gospel to submit in faith to Jesus, the King. And that means, according to Isaiah, comfort and joy, goodness and love, peace and protection, redemption and reward can now be experienced to those who submit to the King, who won that awesome victory at the cross. God coming in victory to establish his rule. Friends, this is the bigger picture of what the gospel is all about. And Jesus' death and resurrection needs to be put in that wider context in order for its significance to be understood. And so what we've looked at today, I believe it has implications for our own understanding of what the gospel is. It also has implications for when we share the gospel with others. By all means, we should be telling people about Jesus' death and resurrection. But to help others understand the significance of those key events, we need to be describing who Jesus is and what he has done in connection with the bigger picture of the God who created the world, who is entering into his creation in the person of Jesus in order to defeat the forces of evil and to establish his perfect rule as king over creation. Now we can think of it this way. Do you remember the four-part framework of the gospel that I've frequently used before when we've been looking at various issues and trying to discuss them from a gospel perspective? Do you remember the four-part framework? What was it that we've mentioned a few times already? Anyone remember? Yeah, we've got generator. The terminology we've used is generator, generation, degeneration and regeneration. Does it look like that something? Yeah? Okay. So basically, in looking at this, we're just talking about, okay, the generator, that's God. Generation is creation. Degeneration is sin entering into the world. And regeneration is salvation, right? The salvation that Jesus has come to achieve for us. So that's a handy way of thinking about the gospel in a way. Generator, generation, degeneration, regeneration, or you can put it in other terms, God, creation, sin, salvation, right? Now, out of those four elements, which one represents the gospel, do you think? Out of all of those, which one is the good news that we're on about when we're talking about Jesus and what he's done? Yeah, regeneration, isn't it? The fourth one there. Okay. So the gospel per se has to do with regeneration. But can a person really understand regeneration without understanding something of what has gone on beforehand? Right, it's a little bit like trying to appreciate the end of the story, but you haven't read the beginning or the middle. To fully understand the end of the story, you need to know what has gone on beforehand. So, in other words, the good news of the gospel in Jesus, it presupposes the existence of God, the existence of the world, and the reality of evil and sin and death as part of that. So those presuppositional elements, they also need to be talked about when we're sharing the gospel with others. In fact, I would suggest that the more divorced a person's worldview is from the facts of God, creation and sin, then before getting to Jesus, in a way, we've got to spend more time helping that person understand the reality of God and the world and how sin has affected the world before we get to Jesus. Otherwise, they're not really going to understand what's this Jesus going to the cross. What's the significance of it all? So for your own understanding, but also as you're sharing the gospel to others, think about, okay, these four elements and the person that you're sharing the gospel to, how much do they understand of these four elements? What are the things that they don't accept or have difficulty understanding? We have to try to help them to see those things. And then when we talk about regeneration and salvation in Jesus, even if they don't really accept the truth of those elements, but at least in theory, having accepted them as something to think about, then they'll see that, okay, in that overall framework, what Jesus has come to do, it makes sense. So, looking at the bigger picture, what then can we say the gospel is? Well, overall, I think we can say that the gospel is the good news about how God in Jesus has come to take back control over the world. Right? This world which has fallen under the control of the forces of evil and sin and death. Well, the good news is God has entered into our world in the person of Jesus to come and take back control. As part of this, the key thing that Jesus did was to go out into the battlefield, to go to the cross. And having won the victory over sin and death, it is highly fitting now for us to accept and submit to his rule. And also to lift up our voices and to shout for joy, to acclaim and to proclaim the victory that our God has won. As we look at Jesus, according to Isaiah, we behold our God who reigns in victory.